This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil show for your Wednesday, which means Stein coming on in here, obviously, as I told him when I got in contact with him. It's another one of those shows, man. It's another one of those shows. He'll be joining us here in about a half an hour. Aaron May Quaid is going to join us as well as Democrat of the day running for Senate. She will join us here coming up in the 5 o'clock hour here. Brett, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Cold and rainy, but it's May.
I mean, two more days, it's going to be in the 70s again anyway.
Well, so. I thought it was even tomorrow was there.
Oh, is it tomorrow? Yeah, I know for sure by Friday it's looking really looking really good for the weather.
Let me check in the old AccuWeather window. Yeah, 63 tomorrow, 77 on Friday, 83 on Saturday, high 80s on Monday. Yikes. It's going to be sticky, man.
Yeah.
It's always nice to go from, hey, where's my jacket, to, oh my God, how can I get more clothes off? 952-946. And that's, by the way, a mantra here, you know?
That is the slogan. Yeah, yeah. Posted right on the door.
There's a reason why my poor name is Hardy Portions. Anyway, it's a great poor name, by the way.
Is that your handle on OnlyFans?
Yeah, that's it. No. There's an OnlyFans page, folks. You got to find it. There is an OnlyFans page for your pleasure. But no, it's not under Hardy Portions. Which is officially my porn name. No, it's not there. You'll have to find it. It's secret. Shh. I'm not in the top whatever percentage, just FYI. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Last I heard, by the way, the Twins are trying to get this probably very wet game in right now over at Target Field. It is the bottom of the ninth, no outs. It's 2-2. Going, I believe, for the sweep. We're done playing Detroit today, correct?
Yeah, this is the last series or the last game with Detroit. Yes.
So we got Sanchez is up right now. So at bottom of the ninth, 2-2. That's where that lies. So, there's a lot of information has come on out since we were here yesterday. So let's run through what we now know about Uvalde, Texas. And the pathetic lack of anything getting done by the Republican Party of America. Officials in Texas described the chilling detail on Wednesday how an 18-year-old gunman shot his grandmother in the face, left her wounded at her home, drove a pickup truck, and crashed at a high speed nearby elementary school and exchanged shots with police officers on the scene who were unable to stop before he killed 19 children and two teachers in a massacre in a single classroom. And I want to stop right there. Police were right there, and they could not stop him. And you know why? Because guns are that lethal. They are. Guns are that lethal. I was in the U.S. Army. Now, I was in the military during Gulf One. During Gulf One, most of my detail was guard duty, but they occasionally came to our unit and picked one or two people that they needed to fill out the ranks in these other units to go. And so that's what happened is there was a few guys that were in our unit that went out, and one or two of them actually were in, you know, combat situations. And one of the guys that went, I wasn't close with the guy. I mean, he was a guy from, one of the different barracks down the way. And he, but we were out drinking one night and we were having a few. And he'd been quiet since then. He said, I tell you what, he goes, M16s, man, they are not, this is an M16. This is the standard, this is the weapon that was issued at that time when I was in the military. It was a semi-automatic weapon, but could be flipped to automatic in a heartbeat. And I've talked about this, and whenever I've talked about shootings, I have talked about the veracity of the bullet and what bullets actually do. They come flying out of the muzzle of a gun, spinning at a high rate of speed, and they hit something. They are designed to do damage. That's what guns do, especially military-grade weapons, which is what we are dealing with here. They keep saying, it was a rifle. It was a rifle. This wasn't a Remington that you used to go get an elk. This wasn't a Remington that you used to go out and get a deer. No, no, no. This is an assault weapon that was used. They keep trying to say rifle to try to make it sound like it wasn't that bad. No, I said this yesterday on the show. It's like, how do you kill this many people with just a pistol and a rifle? I mean, there's only a few rounds you can do in a standard hunting rifle. And so then you find out, it was an assault weapon. That's what this was. My friend who was in this unit that actually saw some combat, he said that he witnessed an individual get shot by the military with M16s. And he said three bullets nearly tore that person into two. And that's how damaging those bullets are. And I'm not saying that to sicken you or make you this. That's just what military weapons do. And it's not like Die Hard where you're emptying a clip into someone. No. In military-grade weaponry, you are looking at the ability to put a person down with one shot. Three shots, and that individual's over. Weapons of this nature are that lethal. You put them on auto, you spray the crowd, there's nothing you can do. They are designed to take out platoons of individuals. Or in this case, an elementary school classroom. And the police being right there, they couldn't stop him. This is, once again, this entire narrative of the Republicans, more guns everywhere. You couldn't stop him. Teachers are armed in Texas. There is no carry and conceal laws in Texas, for God's sake. Anyone can go buy a gun and have it on them. Nope. Couldn't do a damn thing to stop this. And you know why? Because the gun is so lethal, you can't stop the carnage, even if you give that person only 10 seconds. That's all he needs. And he is going to do a lot of damage to a lot of people. Police were right there, and they could not stop him. The gunman was inside the school for roughly 1 hour before the tactical unit from the Border Patrol shot him several times, killing him. According to preliminary investigation documents described by state police official, the gunman identified as Salvador Ramos used an AR-15 style rifle in the rifle. It's an assault weapon, an AR-15 assault weapon, the killing of Tuesday, and a second similar weapon was left in the truck outside. He purchased both guns within the last week, just after his 18th birthday, the official said, because once again, even if you have in this country someone who clearly should not have weapons, the NRA and the Republican Party have done everything in their power to make sure that you cannot stop someone from getting a gun, period. That was exactly what we saw out in Buffalo, Minnesota, when the shooting happened out there, where you had a clearly mentally compromised individual who had years of experience with police officers, that he was mentally compromised. And yet was able to go get a gun because the police officer said, I can't stop him. Thanks to the Republican Party, this is the world they want. At a news conference on Wednesday, officials did not name the motive or catalyst for the killings. Governor Greg Abbott on Texas said that Ramos had no known mental health history, but suggested that mental health issues were a significant factor in the rise of the mass shootings in the United States. But of course, fine, then let's spend a few billion dollars on mental health care and creating a database to prevent people who are mentally compromised from getting guns. Fine, there's a good place to start. Oh, wait, no, you're not going to give any money to it? You're just going to say, oh, darn that mental illness, and then walk away? That's all you're going to do, Republicans. You're not, it's a valid point. Mental health issues are compounding this. So you need to spend the money on treatment of mental health issues and creating a database to prevent people who are mentally compromised, like the shooter in Buffalo, from getting a gun. Oh, wait, you don't want to do that because, frankly, that you'd rather have people terrified to death of gun massacres so that you think that they'll buy more guns? Oh, okay. Wow. Mr. Abbott was confronted at the news conference by a shouting Beto O'Rourke, a former congressman from El Paso and political opponent, accused the governor of failing to address rising gun violence. The chaotic rampage that unfolded in Uvalde, the small city about an hour and a half west of San Antonio, left a community in anguish, devastated families whose children had been violently gunned down at school, and renewed the national debate over firearms legislation and the stupefying tally of gun violence in America. It was the deadliest school shooting since 20 children and six educators were killed at Sandy Hook in Connecticut 10 years ago. The shooting began to unfold on Tuesday morning when the local police department in Uvalde received a 911 call around 11:30 a.m. saying a truck had crashed in the Robb Elementary School and the man had emerged carrying a long rifle in a backpack. At least one armed law enforcement officer from the Uvalde School District was at the school. That officer exchanged gunfire with the gunman. But the gunman was able to get past the officer said, citing the initial report. So once again, you need guns everywhere, cops everywhere. Oh, guns everywhere. There were guns there. They could not stop him. There were guns there. They could not stop him. There were guns there. They could not stop him. Good guy with a gun sucks at stopping bad guy with a gun. Sucks. You guys can't do it. We've given you plenty of opportunities. For God's sakes, this was a perfect opportunity to show us that the Republican mentality of guns should succeed. Good guy with a gun stops bad guy with a gun. Oh, he got away? Oh, and we have a whole bunch of dead children. Well, maybe next time. Wow. The gunman entered through the south door of the school. After he was inside, two officers from the Uvalde Police Department arrived on the scene, engaged the gunmen, were immediately met with gunfire. The official said both were shot. So once again, the good guys with the guns, apparently you don't seem to understand, if they get into a gunfight, they themselves can be shot. It appears that the gunman was, by the way, neither one of those officers did die. They both have been injured, though. It appears that the gunman was contained in one classroom at that time. The officers were unable to enter it. He remained there until a tactical unit from the Border Patrol killed the gunman shortly after 1 p.m. Juan Pablo Ubero Jr. and his little sister, a 10-year-old student at Robb Elementary, described what happened the moments leading up to the massacre. A 19-year-old Mr. Yabara, a 19-year-old Sierra at Uvalde High School, said that when he and his mother first heard about the possible shooting at the elementary school, they frantically drove to the Civic Center where they were told they could reunite with their students, who survived. After several hours, they were reconnected with his sister. We were panicking. I just wanted to talk to my sister. By the way, today, the images of these children. I can't even. An assault weapon. A psychopath got an assault weapon and slaughtered young children. And today, Republicans are still saying, that's the cost of liberty. It's, hey, I'm not cheering this on or anything. Come on, Matt. I'm just saying, you know, the founding fathers, who clearly wrote this for us to gun down them if they got out of line, really want us to have gun slaughters on a daily basis because, you know, rights. Stop slaughtering other people's children for your causes. Stop sacrificing other people for your causes. It's really easy to say, oh, this is an acceptable sacrifice when it's not your kid who has been slaughtered by an assault weapon. The sister told him the fourth grade class had been watching a movie when she looked out of the classroom and saw a man outside with a gun. She told him that she alerted the teacher and that soon the classroom could hear gunfire aimed towards nearby windows. Finally, the sister described how she and her fellow classmates jumped out of the window one by one, ran to a funeral home across the street seeking refuge. All the... America today. Children in terror, screaming, jumping from an elementary school window to run to a funeral home for safety. If that's not the epitome of how low our country has gotten, then I don't know what is. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. More on this when we return. And Jeff Stein, we'll talk with him about this as well. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. So if you are upset at people being upset at the shooting, far more upset at that than the shooting, just for the record, you're the problem, you're not the solution. Just want to make sure we're aware of that. If you are sitting there and you're furious, why is Steve Kerr saying anything? Why are these Democrats upset? If you are more bothered by people upset with a slaughter of young children in an elementary school as opposed to the slaughter of elementary school kids in their school classroom, if you are more upset about the complaining as opposed to the slaughter, you are the problem. You are not the solution. Just FYI. I had a guy today get upset with me because the whole thing with the rifle and the assault weapon. When I saying it's an assault weapon, he's like, no, Matt, the catalog says rifle. You need to call it a rifle. It's an assault weapon. It's an AR-15 style assault weapon. It's designed to kill human beings. It's a military grade weapon. It's not for ducks. It's not for pheasant. It's not for deer. It's for humans. It's designed to kill humans as quickly and as efficiently as it possibly can. And yet here we have another example of how, as advertised. Just days after turning 18 this month, the gunman, I mean, how did he get the gun? How did he get the, oh, he walked into a store and bought them. Oh, okay. He killed 19 children, two teachers in a Texas elementary school on Tuesday, purchased two, this is AR platform rifles, assault weapons, 375 rounds of ammunition, according to the state police briefing. One of the assault rifles was left in the truck to have been driven by the gunman. The other rifle, referred to in the briefing as a Daniel Defense, was found in the school with the gunman with at least seven 30-round magazines. Seven 30-round magazines. Wow. No, the founding fathers. If you think for one second the founding fathers would look at kids being slaughtered in a school classroom and say, yeah, this is what they wanted, you're an idiot. You are a moron. You are seriously dumb as a brick. Seriously, you're a stupid idiot. Founding fathers thought this is slippery slope, Matt, slippery slope, slippery slope, Matt, slippery slope. Shut up. Shut up. It's perfectly fine when it's other people's kids getting slaughtered. Oy. I'll tell you what. Why not? We got Stein coming up here. Josh is in Edina. Welcome in, Josh. Thank you very much for holding. Josh?
Yeah, so I just want to throw out, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
So I just want to throw out a solution. I was listening earlier on the Tom Hartman show, and he brought up about, showing pictures of the images of, what happens with these and everything. And like some other solutions he was taking calls on. And one of my thoughts was, what about teaching gun firearm safety in schools as a requirement course? Teaching kids at a very, very young age what a gun can do. Teach them
because,
how to be safe with it.
Because
as
I think
a requirement.
If a person wants, and thank you, Josh. I appreciate the phone call. If a person wants to get a gun, I think that that's a mandatory thing. You should be able to have to go through gun safety programs. I absolutely do. I think you should. People have a right to not have a gun in their life. I know that that's not, the Second Amendment doesn't mean every person has to have a gun, has to have a gun thrust into their face. It does not mean that. You have a right to not have guns in your life. So I'm against the idea of everyone learning it because there are some people that don't want it. I mean, if you were a young child and someone gunned down your dad, do you think that you would want to go through a gun safety course? Probably not. You probably don't want anything to do with guns after that point. But I mean, if a person wants to get a gun, I think it's a well-regulated militia. Once again, Second Amendment says it. well-regulated militia. And well-regulated militia in the Second Amendment has said that you can regulate guns. Absolutely, you can regulate guns. Absolutely. But the people, the gun nuts, like to you can't stop us. You gotta let us have guns everywhere. Well, this was a case where you had guns everywhere. You had a police officer on the scene who exchanged fire with this individual. They could not stop him. And as a matter of fact, the two officers were shot. You sit there and talk about just, we need to give the every child throwing stars. They can take them out like a ninja. Shut up, you morons. Just shut up. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. And he's right. And one thing he is also right, too many people think you get shot and it's like Die Hard, where you can take 8 bullets and get up and get walking. No, no, no. I talked about this. You remember when there was that woman who was the gun nut and she was in Florida and her young kid found the gun in the backseat of the car, picked up and shot mom through this. And I said, okay, you have to understand, this bullet went through her central cavity. How many organs did she just lose? Spleen, gallbladder, pancreas. Her life will never, one bullet went in on a small hole in the back, made a very large hole in the front. She got some serious damage. That's what happens. And you almost immediately, if you get shot, go into shock. Almost immediately.
I think too often, two people think, oh, if we arm the teachers, it's going to be like an action movie where they're going to be dodging around the classroom and
like
firing.
Like it's Matrix,
on the
yeah. They're going to be running up the walls and you don't do it. No.
No.
No. It's likely that considering the individual's gun's already drawn, safety's off, rounds in the chamber, that teacher's going to be dead. And by the way, that you just gave that gunman another loaded weapon. That's what happens. Vic is in Salem, Oregon. Gosh, we haven't had a call from Oregon in a while. Hey, Vic, thanks for the call.
Yeah, hey, Matt, you're doing a great job.
Thank you, sir.
I think really the basic problem here is that we've allowed the radical right and the news, cable news companies and corporations like CNN, MSNBC, et cetera, frame exactly what the Second Amendment is. They're trying to tell us what the Second Amendment stands for, and they're all wrong, of course. You're the one that's right about what the Second Amendment stands for, yet we got cable news and the Republican radicals and the extremists telling us, like Greg Abbott, trying to tell us what the Second Amendment stands for. Where does it tell us in the Second Amendment that we can have assault rifles on the street?
Well, and Vic,
that's the whole problem.
And Vic, thank you very much. I got to get to Stein here in just a second here, but thank you. And thank you very much for the nice words. That's exactly it. They say it's the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment, but they have whittled it down to right to bear arms. The right to bear arms in order to form well-regulated militia shall not be infringed. That's what it says. So if you're not part of a well-regulated militia, technically you don't have the right to bear arms. That's what the Second Amendment says. So you can sit there and say all day long, I'm supposed to have an Uzi. Jesus would want us to have an Uzi. No. And by the way, speaking of which, Robert Burrill, comedian extraordinaire, I'm going to give him credit on this one. This one is a solid point. Any god that would have this be part of his plan should not be worshipped. Exactly. If you're out there saying it's part of God's plan, really? God wanted a psychopath to walk into a school with an armed assault weapon designed for killing troops in the field and slaughter a bunch of elementary school? That's his plan? Because that doesn't seem like a really good plan. Seems like a really horrible plan. So before you try to validate any of this by invoking Jesus or God or any religious deity, shut the hell up. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. You'll find his books over at Next Chapter Books over in St. Paul. Stop on over there by all the means. Also, totallyiowa.com, the Iowa Business Report, and the Iowa Politics Report comes to us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo. And Jeff, hello, welcome to the show once again.
Matthew, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You and I get to do the same show you and I have done a whole lot over the last 20 plus years. It's yet another gun slaughter in America. Once again, what is becoming an incredibly disturbing element of it, a slaughter of elementary young children in a classroom. Clearly, I mean, we are still within the day or so since this slaughter happened, but there definitely is a lot of angry people asking, why are we not doing anything to try to stop this at this point?
And the primary answer to that is you can't stop it, but you can contain it. There is no one good answer and one good resolution, because if there was, we'd have done it. It's not just guns, but that is a large part of it. It is not just mental health, but that is a large part of it. And no one wants to sit down and see where common ground is. I heard something, and you may know much more about this than I. I did not have time to look it up, but I heard reported last night that in the New York Times, Nicholas Kristof wrote a piece that suggested we need to reframe the whole discussion. And his suggestion was, we're never going to get anywhere if we keep talking about gun control, because that has now meant certain things to certain people on both sides. We need to talk about gun safety. And if, in fact, we're talking about something more than just a name change, that might be the way that you can get people from a broad cross-section of society to sit down and say, how do we make lives more safe? And that can take you to the next level of things to do with regard to weaponry, with regard to lack of proper mental health.
Here's where I'm going to completely and totally disagree with you on this, because I don't believe it's about making sure far-right gun nuts are their feelings aren't hurt in their boo-boo kitty time as they need a snuggle. We have slaughtered children. We have a military-grade assault weapon that was designed to go into a combat zone and kill human beings, taken into an elementary school, and they had to take DNA from parents to identify some of these children. Mm-hmm. There is this argument out there that the left is trying to take your guns. In this country, in 20 years, the only gun policy we've had is an expansion of more guns everywhere. Every single time. Laws get struck down, bills get passed to carry guns. I mean, in Texas, there are laws that allow teachers to carry guns in classrooms. For God's sakes, there was an officer armed at this school. That is the entire argument. Well, we got guns in the schools that will keep them safe. Both officers that confronted this guy were shot, and then he went on the slaughter. It's the guns themselves. And granted, I appreciate some of the Republicans out there who say, yes, this is a mental health issue. So then where's the damn bill for billions of dollars in investment in mental health care, as well as a database to prevent compromised mental individuals from getting weapons? Doesn't exist. It's easy to put out these, we need to regulate Facebook and video games, and oh, you need a Steve Kerr needs to be reined in. The reality is that we have done everything the conservative NRA way. And this is just getting worse and worse and worse. So maybe it is time for us to go to gun control, because for God's sakes, the guns everywhere method is not working.
Now, you'll notice nothing I said talked about any group, any faction, used any name calling at all, because I don't think the way we have been, this is where I do agree with you, discussing this issue in the way we have been is not working.
But the first
so
person
finds some place, and to your point about where's the damn bill, great, where is it? Let's see a bill that can get a majority of votes on mental health. Let's see that, because it is a huge component of it. I respect the idea of saying, look, if this 18-year-old couldn't get two assault rifles, this wouldn't have happened. This particular manifestation would not have. Absolutely. But go back to the earlier point. You cannot prevent every bad thing. But what you can do...
but why are we the only country on the planet that this stuff happens in, for God's sakes?
I don't care about other countries on the planet. I want to take care of our country. I want to take care of our kids. With our history, with our set of laws and our Constitution. And I don't think you do it the way we have framed these two sides of an issue that each get more entrenched every single time. I'm simply saying you need to have a conversation that says, what we're doing isn't working. What are you trying to do? You want to protect kids in school? How do we do that? And work it back from there, as opposed to people just having veins pop out of their necks on all sides of the issue.
These kids deserve us to be angry about this. The families that are dealing with slaughtered children deserve this. Paul Gosar yesterday put out his first tweet was about, it's a trans kid who's a leftist, who's basically an illegal immigrant, and he gunned down a bunch of kids. None of those things are true.
Right.
You know, I've sat here for years hearing the violent, ugly vitriol from the right about loony lefties trying to take our guns, jackbooted thugs, black helicopters, blah, 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 freaking blah. I have heard the vilification from the right constantly. And in the hours after, we're all saying, sweet Jesus, how do we sit here and say, you know, my God, these are young children. I am not on board with the idea that, you know, we need to make sure no one's feelings get hurt when we approach the table here. And I just am of the mindset that if we can't sit there and say, and it's really easy and convenient now to say no other country on the planet matters because no other country on the planet has this problem. But the reality is there are gun laws written in Canada, Australia, lots of countries. You just don't have the slaughters. The slaughters are happening because guns are encouraged and put up on a pedestal. There is only one constitutional amendment that matters. We've seen the freedom of the press, freedom of protest, freedom of speech, all curtailed. We are seeing Roe v. Wade. They're revisiting liberty, for goodness sakes. We're seeing all these things. All these things can be whittled down, but what we have to do is look at the Second Amendment. The right to bear arms in order to form a well-regulated militia should not be infringed. We boil that down to three words, four words, right to bear arms, and that's it. And this is the lunacy of it all. We're not getting anything done because one political party is so completely bought and paid for by the gun and bullet industry that they are told to not do anything, and here we are. In the wake of another slaughter of young children, all the Republicans are saying we're not going to pass any legislation.
It is not that I'm not angry about the situation. It's that I'm just dreadfully tired of predictable responses, which is why I avoided all of the coverage last night beyond the news items of what happened, how many are affected, et cetera, because it just becomes predictable and it's not getting us anywhere. And there is plenty of blame to go around. If you're taking money from a gun interest and you are then acting in their interest and not the interests of young people, families, humans broadly, I don't think that's right. I also don't think it's right to just jump out and make certain calls for things before you even know what the facts of the situation are. You and I think, have agreed on one thing in the past on this, where I have said, show me a piece of legislation where you can say, see, by doing this limitation on weaponry, and by the way, I don't know why you need to get a gun the day you decide to buy one. All right, go ahead and do all sorts of checks. I mean, that's fine. You know, if that's going to help, let's do that. But so many times you see too many people say we need to regulate this when that would not have impacted the situation at issue. So I just want people to have a conversation about it stops here, it stops now, and let's frame the conversation in a way that gets to the ultimate goal. Slaughtering children, not good. How do you protect children? Now let's walk it back from there. And I don't care, to your earlier point that you've made a couple of times, and I respect it, I don't care about somebody's feelings getting hurt. I don't. I really don't. I'd like to see families not have to gather at a community center and meet privately with law enforcement where outsiders can hear them wailing afterwards, as happened last night when they got the news.
Two things here. One is, we as a country, we had Tylenol getting poisoned in like a handful of drugstores in the country.
Yeah.
And we immediately sprang into action. We put in safety caps. We put in security cameras. We did all this stuff because a handful of people were killed by a psychopath poisoning Tylenol.
And to make your point stronger, the company pulled the stuff from the shelves immediately.
Yeah.
That was the first, because I remember that. It was mid-80s, I think, or late 80s. And they immediately said, we think this is isolated, but we are not going to take the chance.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You have the industry leading the charge.
Here's where that comes back then.
Mm-hmm.
You have here's the fatal flaw of America. We have the ability of a small handful of people, how many total executives and of the bullet manufacturers and the gun manufacturers are there? Maybe a few hundred total people that run these companies, that have enough money to not only buy off every politician from a political party to basically get them in line and basically say, you're never going to pass a piece of legislation to regulate this, regardless of how many slaughters happen in elementary schools. And on top of it, can control the media narrative to where they basically, convince people that if you stop people from slaughtering people and children in schools, well, that's a slippery slope. I mean, I'm saying I'm for slaughtering kids, but slippery slope, come on. And, and that is... that's the fatal flaw, is that we have realized a small majority of people with a lot of money, or even one individual with a lot of money, can control an entire narrative of an issue when it's to the detriment of us as a society. Because let's face it, there's no sane society would sit here and consistently have gun slaughter after gun slaughter after gun slaughter, let alone gun slaughter after gun slaughter after gun slaughter in schools, and sit there and say, nothing we can do. I mean, because let's face it, everything we've done, guns in schools. I mean, we had a police officer there. It didn't stop this guy. There were guns in the school. There was a teacher, apparently, that had a license in the school to have a gun for this exact situation. Didn't stop the guy. Because these guns are made to kill human beings as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And henceforth, they should not be, assault weapons designed for a military combat should not be available to the public.
Okay, so now that's my question to you.
Yes.
Based upon, and I'm pleading ignorance because, again, not only did I have other things, I'm just tired of the back and forth, as I've already suggested. I don't know the specific weaponry used here other than a couple of weeks after the individual turned 18, he bought two rifles.
Rifles. They're calling them, they're AR platforms. They're assault weapons. They're assault weapons.
All right.
The rifle use of the name rifle is there to basically try to soften the image of it. It's not a rifle. A rifle's a Remington you use to say hunt a deer or an elk. Okay. And that's this guy went in there with a rifle. I was like, he's got a rifle? How is he able to kill this many people with a rifle that quickly? It doesn't work that way. And then it's like, oh, no, it's an assault weapon. They just call it a rifle as, I guess, a way to say, well, we didn't sell them an assault weapon. We sold them a rifle.
Okay, and that's fair. And because I have no background in firearms, I never served in the military. You did. And again, as we near Memorial Day, I appreciate the service of all who served, especially those who did not come back. My question to you is, what could have been done to prevent this? In other words, do you develop a category of weaponry that has no earthly purpose other than militia style killings and such? And militia is not the right term because of the Second Amendment, but you understand what I'm saying. Is there a category where we could say, all right, this, I don't care if you call it a rifle, this isn't, there's no purpose. You can't use it for hunting, et cetera. It's only to be used by the U.S. government and military, and therefore you can't just buy it at Shields or Walmart.
I mean, a well-regulated militia. Well, it comes down to this. When anyone's sitting and designing a weapon, If you're designing a hunting weapon, you're designing a weapon to hunt whatever, deer, ducks, pheasant, whatever the case may be. Yeah. If you're, I have no problem with hunting weapons. I would never own one, but I personally don't have a problem with personal defense pistols, which have usually a chamber of 8 to 6 rounds, and you can basically, that are designed to basically be used in a limited self-defense mode. But still, right, trust me when I say this, a bullet comes out of there, it's going to do some damage. That correct, being said, there are weapons that when the person sits down with a pencil and graph paper to start drawing this out, and probably showing my age, a computer program to start the design process. The purpose of that weapon is to be used to kill as many human beings as fast and as quickly as possible. That's a military grade weapon. So when you look at, when I was in the military, there were M16s. That was a weapon when someone sat down and said, this is a weapon that's going to be used by military people to kill other human beings, and they need to be able to do it efficiently because they're in a combat zone. That is what was used on these elementary school kids. And that, in my mind, I think you can make that delineation, what was designed for human beings, what's designed for hunting. I know a lot of pro-gun knuckleheads will sit there and say, well, I use it for hunting. No one uses an assault weapon for ducks or for deer. They don't, because the damage you're doing to the animal is, it makes it useless. So either you're a psychopath slaughtering animals out in the wild, or else you're just actually using an actual hunting weapon.
Okay, now, and that's where we get to, I hate to compare myself with the average person in this country. That's not fair to the average person in this country. They're much better. But there are people on far extreme sides of any debate. But again, I don't know anything about guns. I like the fact that we have constitutional amendments to protect us from government. I also like the fact that kids aren't being killed in schools. So I think it's time to have a rational conversation that says, as you pointed out, this is a military-grade weapon that is designed to engage in the normal function of war, which is to kill people and break things. It's indelicate, but that's the fact.
Yes.
So, okay, are there ways that you can have weaponry that fits under the Second Amendment for whatever purposes that we've talked about, personal protection, hunting game, etc., that wouldn't be specifically designed for hunting humans? And I think if you describe it in that way,
yes,
you're going to get more people to be interested than any gun lobby money. But nobody is having that conversation. I mean, we're having this conversation today, and I hope the audience finds it helpful. But that's where you've got too many people on one side saying all or nothing, too many people on the other side saying all or nothing, and the rest of us are sitting here mourning the death of, you know, 24 people, nearly 24 families, never going to be the same.
Well, and I'll say this. The one side has not been able to stop anything. The left has not been able to stop the gun slaughter in this country. The right has controlled the entire argument, and there are more guns in this country than ever before. There's more guns. Was it 125 guns per every 100 people in this country? And we're not safer. So the policies of one side are what are derailing us. We got to take a break.
Look at this real quick.
We've got to get this break in. 952-946-6205. Take a break. I'll let you finish your point when you come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us. Jeff, I did interrupt you. Please go right ahead.
Oh, no. It was a very simple statement. Look what happened to the price of stocks of gun companies today. They shot up because of the fact that people are expected, when there's talk about, oh, we're going to take guns, people then irrationally act and go buy guns, even though they never wanted a gun. They just want to make sure they have one before it's taken away. And so speculators are bidding up the price of gun manufacturer stocks. Well, that doesn't make any sense either, does it? That the day after a tragedy like this, you're now buying stock in gun companies. That's a cynical commentary, isn't it?
It's sick. Last question for you. Yeah, do you think when all these politicians put out their Christmas cards with their and their whole family holding assault weapons, that's helping or hurting?
It's not helping. No, it's not helping. Because you can take a strong stand and be compassionate about it. But the concept of in your face, I don't like that. I don't like that confrontation on, I'm not a confrontation person, but yeah, it's not helpful to stand there with your assault weapon under the Christmas tree. No.
Don't we have a right in this country to not have a gun or not have a gun waved in our face?
Any constitutional right that a person has, you have the right to not be infringed upon, right? So for example, if I don't want to have a gun, then you can't make me have a gun.
Yeah.
We have the right to safety, and that's part of the balancing. You can invoke whatever constitutional provision you want, so long as it does not operate in conflict with one of mine. And life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that seems pretty fundamental.
Well, and it does. Unfortunately, though, here's where life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness butts up against the Second Amendment, because the Second Amendment annihilated life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness yesterday.
Exactly.
So, but right now we're getting ready for SCOTUS to weaken those laws even more.
Yeah. We just keep waiting for more answers, and I think people need to speak passionately but respectfully, and that's the only way to get it done.
Jeff Stein, once again, Iowa Politics Report. I'll post a little bit later. Thanks, Jeff. Hour 2, that's coming up next with Aaron Mayquaid. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show on your Wednesday. We'll have the Stein interview spotlight, and you can listen to that a little bit later on if you so choose. Matt and Brett here. Patrick, our other producer, he's over at the Target Field. Apparently, the Twins loaded the bases, no one out, and they
had all their big hitters up that completely didn't do anything.
Well, it's you can't win them all, but yeah, they're still pretty good. I'm feeling still pretty good about them, but still, you got to figure, especially like the last two games. So they lost 4-2 was the final. They got Kansas City in town, and we should be able to meet up.
Thank goodness for the AL Central.
that's not a good division. Before I get into the next guest, a reminder: today is the 2-year commemoration of the death of George Floyd, who was murdered by a police officer in the middle of the street at 38th and Chicago in Minneapolis. There's going to be a lot of memorials out there. We're going to talk more about this coming up in the second half hour. But it's clear we have a long way to go. The governor did make a formal proclamation calling it George Floyd Remembrance Day. Unicorn Riot is up on social media. They are posting a lot of imagery from that evening as well as in the days afterwards. It was disturbing, the death. It was disturbing, the uprising. At the same time, though, it was a lot of people saying enough is enough. And like I said, we're going to get up to it here in just a few minutes, where we're going to talk a little bit in regards to the fact that not a lot has been done at all to fix the problems. But that's a different issue. 952-946-6205. It's not easy, I imagine, becoming a national news story, just as Aaron Mayquaid did. She is running for Senate District 56 in the primary. And, of course, if you missed the news, she was at the convention for the district and the endorsing convention. And basically she went into labor, had to withdraw from that, but has decided to go to the primary for Senate District 56, which is, by the way, if there ever was a mulligan to skip the convention and go to the primary, it was this. Aaron Mayquaid is kind enough to join us as Democrat of the Day today. Hi, Aaron. How are you? We got her there? Is there she?
Yeah, we'll...
Yeah. No,
I'll try her on our landline.
Okay, we'll try it again there. See if we can get in touch with her on that. Hopefully we'll get to her here in a second and see if this is going to work or not. Because it is, it's pretty good. It's pretty good when People Magazine is being covered in People. It's becoming, I think, a London Times picked it up. It was covered everywhere. And by the way, I should mention, the baby's name is Harriet, and they're calling her Hattie, which is absolutely adorable. Adorable. And to Elise and to Aaron, congratulations on that, as that is fantastic news. And like I said, if there ever was a qualification for a mulligan to go to the primary, it was that situation. Aaron, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. Is Harriet and Elise and you all doing okay?
Yeah, we are. Harriet had a little bit of jaundice. I had postpartum preeclampsia, which is actually pretty scary and dangerous, but we're all healed, we're all healthy, and we're managing, you know, a few hours of sleep here and there.
I know you're going through. I've got three kids, so I know it's a tiring thing. All my best to you, and congratulations. That's just wonderful. And like I said, it must have been a little bit wow that all of a sudden everyone from the LA Times to London Times, everyone was covering that story.
You know, it was we were in the hospital. I was delivering Harriet. And so we came out of the hospital like 4 or 5 days later and then learned that this had traveled, you know, around the world. So we appreciated the well wishes and, you know, Hattie really got to come into the world in a really glorious, grand way. But it was really surprising to see how far that story traveled.
And by the way, Hattie is adorable. That's such an adorable name. It is. Oh, congratulations on that. And getting to the politics thing, I mean, the thing which was nice is there were maybe one or two grumblings, but I don't think anyone, if there ever was to say, okay, go to the primary, this is the case. I don't think, you know, I'm kind of glad people aren't making a big deal out of it because, as I've always said, the process is to go to the primary anyway. That's always an option. And so in this case, though, I think it's a no-brainer that, you know, the decision couldn't be made at the convention, unfortunately, but then you go to the primary and that's where you'll get the decision made.
Yeah, absolutely. And even that day, you know, I had asked my opponent, can we suspend and go to the primary? Because I can't keep doing balloting. I'd been in labor since 2 a.m. and I was coming up on 12 hours. And it just was really clear I wouldn't be able to finish that convention and, you know, see through to an endorsement.
We have a lot of issues here, and I think when we look at this upcoming election, the thing that is very clear is we have got a very stark reality if the Republicans take over. And the Senate, especially with the redistricting that happened, frankly, the DFL has a very good chance of picking it up, but we need to get all the seats we can, including this seat. I'm going to just bring up some of the issues we've seen here because the state Republican Party has echoed a lot of what's going on the national level and said that's going, you know, the state Republican Party is going to follow the Republican National Republican Party lead. Let's start with, unfortunately, the tragedy yesterday in Texas. You know, we clearly need some common sense gun regulations in this country, but yet Republicans are still, they're doing thoughts and prayers and offering very little else in the way of trying to stop the slaughter of young children in this country.
Yeah, I mean, and this was an issue when I was a state representative, right? I led a sit-in with a number of other legislators to protest an action against gun violence, and still nothing moved, right? And this was the anniversary of Columbine had just happened, Parkland had just happened. And if we can't, I mean, 90% of Minnesotans support background checks on all gun sales. I think it's like 86% support red flag laws. These are widely accepted common sense proposals. And what is in the way is Republican leaders who are, you know, still doing their deal with the gun lobby and refusing to take these measures to keep us safe. And, you know, people have had enough. The grief, the trauma, the horror, I mean, just seeing it today and yesterday, that's 19 babies that didn't get to go home to their mamas yesterday. And I was holding my own baby and just, yeah. I mean, it is a lot, right? And we have to have action. We have to see action and something has to be done. And if Republicans won't do anything, then they need to be voted out of office. DFLers need to be in control so that we can actually move some of these policies.
You speak of it on that level. And I can so relate to that. I remember when Newtown happened and I sat there just trying to hold in the tears as the school bus came. I just wanted my kids off that bus. I wanted them in my arms. I wanted that done. Red Lake, when that slaughter happened, this has happened over and over again. And like I said, once you become a parent and something like this happens when you see this, it's that terror of, oh my God, because I guarantee you no one in Uvalde, Texas sent their kids to school today thinking that was going to be what happened to that day. And it just is just horrific when we see this happen time and time again.
And it's been 10 days since the Buffalo shooting, yes. Right? So we've bookended this week with, you know, grandparents getting vegetables at the grocery store to children, you know, going to their last few days of school, which, let's be honest, are the most fun days. You're almost done. It's summer. And that cannot be the reality we continue to live in. And What I worry about is that there's a lot of despair. I see that certainly a lot of despair, and despair lies to us and tells us that there's nothing we can do. There is something we can do, right? This is not an unsolvable problem. We just have to have the political will and courage to mobilize and organize and vote and then hold leaders accountable to make sure that we're moving policies and changing culture, because that is part of this as well.
Another national issue, which you're seeing a lot of state Republicans start to echo, the impending repeal of Roe v. Wade by the Alito decision on the court here. It comes down to control. This is not about life. I mean, clearly, I don't think a lot of Republicans really, they scream they care about life, but they have a very, erratic track record on that. But the reality is this, once again, it seems to be all about controlling women and controlling women's bodies. And I find this just offensive that here we are yet once again.
It is about power and control. You're exactly correct. And I think one of the scary parts about living through this really horrible time is that none of it feels real because it's so bad. When we listened to the oral arguments in December, it was very clear that this court intended to overturn Roe v. Wade. In fact, I've spent the last 3 years leading Unrestrict Minnesota, the largest reproductive health rights and justice coalition in the state, because this was coming and we knew that. And people should understand that it is not just abortion. It is birth control. It is marriage equality. It's interracial marriage. It's all of the things that allow us to make our families and live our lives in this country. That's what they're going after. So it starts with, Roe v. Wade and abortion, but all the other things are being lined up like dominoes to fall after it. And falling into this authoritarian state, it's happening in real time. It's kind of like a slow burn. Mm-hmm. And folks really need to understand that this is, we are about to lose so many things that we hold dear, these fundamental rights to make our families and live our lives in ways that are real and authentic to us, and have that stripped away and that power and control returned to a minority of elected officials who want to control our lives, control our bodies, and control what we do.
And your point is spot on. The there are Republicans in the state of Minnesota who have not only said we're going to ban abortion for and make it a crime and arrest women, even in the cases of rape and incest and the life of the mother. But on top of that, they've already started. There are Republicans who are floating the idea that they're going to make birth control illegal in the state of Minnesota.
Yep. And we should understand what this already looks like in other states. So, there are people who show up at hospitals who are having miscarriages, who are being turned away because doctors are afraid of treating people who are experiencing miscarriage to be prosecuted for performing an abortion. So this is already having a chilling effect, impacting the health of people across the country. People will die. Pregnancy is very, I'm proof positive. I had postpartum preeclampsia that is incredibly dangerous. Pregnancy itself can be very dangerous, and forcing people to remain pregnant, give birth, criminalizing the people who perform abortions or who deliver children or serve pregnant people, this is going to endanger so many people. And in Minnesota, so if Roe v. Wade is overturned, we will still have legal abortion, but all the states around us won't. And so we're about to see an influx of people coming to Minnesota to receive care, and we do not have the resources and providers and clinics to serve that many. We don't even have them to serve the Minnesotans who need that care, let alone all of the states around us. So it's really a precarious situation that we're about to enter into in June.
Erin May Quaid is joining us, Senate District 56 Democrat of the day, running for the primary there for the DFL side. Let's actually turn in a little bit more towards your district. What are some of the, first of all, how much did the district change with the redistricting?
Not a ton. We lost two precincts from Lakeville. We lost Coates and then a small portion of Rosemount, gained a portion of Eagan, which I was really happy to gain because it's my, I went to ECU High School, and so it's the part of Eagan that goes to ECU High School. So I'm really excited to have them and welcome them to the district.
What are some of the issues that you want to champion for 56?
So reproductive health rights and justice, certainly. Climate justice is so important. Education. I went to the schools here. I'm a graduate of ISD 196 schools. My teachers still live in this district. My friends teach in this district. If we don't fully fund our schools at the state level, cover the special education gap, we are not setting young people up for success. And then serving our families. So paid family medical leave, fully funded childcare, universal pre-K, gun violence prevention, these are the things that I want to focus on. And then the final one is serving our veterans. That is a passion of mine, and I hope to continue to serve on the Veterans Committee in the State Senate.
As a veteran, I say thank you for that. I know you've got a, you've got a very good track record there. As a, I'm a person who served in the U.S. Army, so I pay attention to that. By the way, I was in your district substantially this last weekend. My daughter had a soccer tournament over there. And I was over there. You know, one of the things that's really interesting is I was over and it came in on 52, about 145th Street there. So kind of the southeastern side of your district. And there still is a lot of, and there's a lot of growth going on. Good growth, too. Like, you know, great looking subdivisions. You got a lot of, you know, the residual businesses that are coming in to help and build those communities. Talk about that. I mean, because as you look at that, there is a lot of growth area over there on that east side. Lots of potential. But you know, once again, it's kind of making sure that it gets developed correctly.
Yeah, and I will say Apple Valley certainly has a great track record of building mixed-income housing. So we'll build, you know, big houses, and we'll build some townhomes on the outside and some apartments right around that. And so one of the things that I love about this community is that we have mixed-income housing all throughout the city, and that kids are going to school with neighbors that, you know, make the same amount as their parents do, that don't make the same amount as their parents do, and learning together and living together. The district is increasingly diverse. One third of the kids who go to school here are kids of color. So we have a lot of growth, certainly, like you mentioned, in housing, in diversity, in businesses, which is wonderful. And it's a growing, thriving suburb. I mean, I've lived here my whole life. When my parents moved here, they said it was cornfields in Apple Valley High School.
Yeah.
It is certainly a lot more than that now.
Well, it's just so funny you say that. When I was born, my mom lived down in Apple Valley. I was down there, and it was, you can kind of tell where those old houses were. The rest of it was Apple Valley. there was not much there. It has grown well. And one of the things that I love about Apple Valley, Rosemont as well, it's the world that we want. I mean, I live in Hopkins. It's the same thing. True diversity, true opportunity, a middle-class life that is available to everyone. This is not something that is available in a lot of places. And the development that's happened in Apple Valley and Rosemont, they have done it well to where you do definitely see that world we're supposed to inherit where equal opportunity does exist.
Absolutely. And you have to give credit not only to city, county leaders, but also to the community members who've organized so well in Rosemount and Apple Valley and in Eagan to make sure that as we grow, we build the things we want. So there's, you know, climate justice task force at the city level. There's people who are organizing to make sure that we have, you know, pollinators and that we're building sustainably. I mean, these are really, really local organizers that are doing this work. And it's part of why we have such great communities.
You do have the Minnesota Zoo in your district, don't you?
Yes, we do.
Oh, Hattie's going to love that. Okay, so, you know, when you take her in there, I mean, I had one, my oldest is a son, and the other two were girls, and I took them in, and when I took them in, if they ever have a baby tapir, holy God, is that about the most cutest? I mean, that is sickly sweet how adorable a baby tapir is. If you get the chance to take Hattie to them, if they have one, by all means, please do. You'll thank me for it.
Well, and I'll tell you, every kid who's grown up in Apple Valley knows that one of the rites of passage every year, like K through 12, is the walk you take from your school to the zoo for your day at the zoo. And so I'm really looking forward to volunteering on those field trips with Hattie. They just built this beautiful treetop walkway
that's
gorgeous and is going to be incredible. And they're revamping so many parts of the zoo. It's just going to be a fabulous part of our whole family's life. I mean, we're members of the zoo already, so we can't wait to keep going.
I'm a member of the zoo, too. It's worth it. And it's nice to have someone like you would be such a great advocate for the zoo in St. Paul as well.
Yes, I've carried the bonding bill to fund the zoo and will continue to advocate for these wonderful projects that are in the district. I mean, it's our state zoo. It's our priority. For all legislators, but certainly for me.
Well, and get ready. Hattie will love when they do the Halloween thing with the pumpkins. Oh, she'll love that.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. That is so incredible, that talent. Yes, we go every year.
Beautiful. Well, all right. So once again, there is a primary coming up. What's the date on the primary?
So the primary is August 9th. Early voting starts on June 24th.
All right.
So we will be having early voting events. People can check out the website, erinmayquade.com. But yes, August 9th is the primary. Make sure you vote. Make sure you vote, you know, early. We always say we want people to vote early because that way you get it out of the way and make sure nothing like, you know, going into labor 2 weeks early comes up on August 9th and you can't vote. Just, you know, make sure you vote and get out of the way.
Okay, by all means, there is a reason. There is a benefit here. Erin May Quaid, ErinMayeQuade. I'll link to everything on social media a little bit later on. Erin May Quaid, I said this last time you were on the air. I'm glad you're running again. All my best in the primary, and all my best to your family. Fantastic.
Thanks so much. Look me up next time you're in Apple Valley. I'll come watch a soccer game.
Oh, by all means. All right, and we'll go to the zoo. Oh, I might have.
There
might,
you go.
I might have to get Hattie something at the zoo. I miss when my girls were little and I'd buy them something. Oh, I'll talk to you about that, okay?
Sounds good. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Erin May Quaid joining us. Democrat of the day, Senate District 56. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. And by the way, and just want to be fair, we'll have the other candidate for 56 on. We'll have him. That's, I interview for one person in the race. I'll interview for both. I have no problem with that. And here's the deal. And I have to say this every year. Now, this was a really unique case. She went into labor, for God's sakes. But that aside, the good thing is, once again, there hasn't been too much belly aching. People understand that that was a unique situation. But it always amazes me. I mean, we saw this at the Republican convention. Schultz wins the AG race, and Wardlow says he's going to take it to the primary. And they're like, how dare you? No, that's his right. It's his right. I get it. You want to have a running start at Ellison so you can basically figure out a better attack strategy than Black Muslim Man. But that is his right. He is able to take this to the primary because, once again, a convention is a small group of people. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if Wardlow did win it. Easily, if you want to know the truth. The same thing happened. I remember when Aaron Murphy and Rebecca Otto and Tim Walz were facing off on that convention. Remember that? Oh, and yeah. Aaron Murphy won. And it was funny because I made the point. I said, oh, it was all the people, Aaron Murphy people before that, because they weren't expecting to win, were saying, we're taking this to the primary. We're taking this to the primary. And then the minute they won, it's like, how dare Tim Walz not concede? No, that's the rules. You can do that. You can take it to the primary. And that's it. I mean, I understand it might frustrate you, but you're if you think your finish line is the convention endorsement, you're wrong. The finish line is the primary. And if you end up not having any primary challengers, great. Bon voyage. You've got yourself an easy walk ahead. But if you do, you that's why you plan for the primary. That's the deal. So 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what, let's get this next break in. And then I got to get to a lot of different things. Minnesota coronavirus update, results in Minnesota 1. Oh, Jen. Speaking of Grand Canyon. And also, I'm going to pick a bone with the New York Times. And this, stop. No, the police haven't done anything in reform in Minneapolis in 2 years. They haven't. And we said they wouldn't because you've got the police union in the way. And here we are. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. God. 2 years ago, man. I remember I remember someone on, I think it was Twitter, said, Matt, have you seen the video? And I said, video? There's video of this? And I remember coming in the next day I did a show and being livid about, you know, and you have to remember, they first of all put out a lot of lies from the Minneapolis Police Department on what exactly did happen. And then came the Bob Kroll letter. Remember the Bob Kroll letter where he was talking about these honest cops, they deserve their jobs back. You mean the murderers? Yes. Apparently so. I remember people trying to argue with me that someone shoplifting a tube of toothpaste from a Target was 10 times worse than what happened to George Floyd. Wow, really? I saw a lot of damage. The images that came out in the nights after that, I remember one of a police officer just pulling up without any warning a crown control device and hitting a guy 10 feet away from him square in the chest. No warning, no nothing. And I'm like, dear Lord, what the hell are these people doing? I also remember the first day I drove down to, you know, Lake in Hiawatha in the zone where all the bad, the major part of the destruction happened, because the destruction happened throughout the city. But a lot of it happened down there. And I saw a lot of people out there picking up and cleaning up. And I saw a woman, an elderly woman with a broom, and just sweeping the sidewalk, just sweeping up the sidewalk. That was truly horrible what happened. And what you really saw, what we all know we saw now, was an out of control police department that feels like they have no culpability whatsoever. They don't, that there is no accountability for their actions whatsoever, that they can do anything that they wanted to, and they went to that extreme to kill a man in the street. And by the way, I do want to make sure we mention, in this upcoming election, the Republicans will not want to talk about this, because most of them will never, they didn't want Derek Chauvin charged. They didn't want Derek Chauvin charged. They didn't want the other officers charged. And as a matter of fact, I think a major part of the concern, especially with the AG's race, will a Republican AG try to undo these court rulings? Will they file appeals on behalf of the officers to try to get them out of prison? I think that's something that should be asked. That police department, and I've said this, and we said this 1,000 times over, and I'll say it again. The vast majority of police departments are fantastic. They're nice. They don't do anything like this. They protect and serve. They care for you. This is not about the St. Paul police, the Duluth police, the Rochester police. This is not about Bloomington or Woodbury, Maple Grove, Blaine. This is not about White Bear Lake or Edina. This is not about Eden Prairie or Burnsville. It's not. It's only about the Minneapolis Police Department, because the Minneapolis Police Department created a culture there to where they ruled over the citizens of Minneapolis. And you saw that spill out 2 years ago when they decided to murder someone in the street and then were incensed that anyone dare try to hold them accountable. Incensed. Reading from the New York Times story on this, it was a searing example of police department hitting rock bottom. A veteran police officer murdering George Floyd, a black man on a busy street in broad daylight, set off racial justice protests around the globe. Minneapolis promised to set an example. Changing the world starts here, said, pardon me while I laugh at that line. The changing the world starts here, says Mayor Jacob Fry, wrote an opinion essay. Once again, they can't even shut down that intersection and create some sort of bypass around it so that they can preserve it and yet allow traffic to get through it. So, yeah, all right. You can't even do that. In the 2 years since, the mayor has ordered the host of policy changes to rein in the police, including banning chokeholds, which they still do, restricting no-knock warrants, which they still do, and traffic stops, and stepping up discipline for misconduct, which they don't do at all. And I'll get back to that here in a second. But the department has repeatedly been caught violating the mayor's edicts, killing a man in a no-knock raid using warrior-style training for recruits, and according to a new investigation, escalating encounters with the public to a point to the use of force is required. Even as this tries to remake his police force, the city is grappling with the same crime spike in the rest of the country. Violent crime in Minneapolis up 36% over the year of the same period of 2019 and is combating it with an officer corps depleted by the coronavirus pandemic and low morale. I'll follow up with the Racket's take on this. Racket magazine here in town. If you've not read it, it's fantastic. Derek Chauvin murdered George Floyd 2 years ago today. In light of how little progress has been made to rein in the Minneapolis Police Department and protect the city's black residents from armed agents of the state, there's not much to say that won't come off as empty pontificating or despair fodder. In fact, there's not much to say that we don't say here every day, not much that anyone reading this doesn't already know. The police and the mayor's office have dealt in bad faith with the public. Fry in particular has misrepresented his positions and those of the political opponents. And for all the city's policy, fine-tuning large-scale effective reform isn't even on the agenda. And if you're wondering how the world outside Minnesota will see what's been going on here, though, the subhead of today's New York Times story on whether policing has changed in Minneapolis in the past years, 2 years, insists the mayor has tried to overhaul the police. Max Nesterak, the reformer, offers a good rebuttal on Twitter. It's almost like you can't distill the local political dynamics affecting the complex issue into a single general interest story from 1,500 miles away. Reminder, only one police officer has been held accountable outside of Derek Chauvin and the other three officers. And that officer was punished because she talked off the record with a GQ, I think it was GQ magazine, if I remember correctly. And boy, oh boy, the police sure, all of a sudden they got out their magnifying glasses and started investigating the crime. Thanks, Angela Lansbury. Figured out who did that pretty quick. But hey, let's talk about the crap-ass cops that went out there and, first of all, opened fire on Stallings, then beat him in the streets as they talked about firing rounds at innocent civilians and defending the honor of white supremacists. Oh, how many of those officers have you held accountable, you jackasses? Oh, that's right, zero. Zero. You've had that footage for 2 years. Zero police officers have been held accountable there. Zero. Nothing. And as a matter of fact, you tried, even though you had all the body cam footage, you tried to throw Stallings in jail. Who was acquitted, was found not guilty because you're a bunch of thugs. 2 years. 2 years, nothing. And you know why? It's the thing that ballot initiative in November got right. There's a lot that was wrong with it. There was. But it's the one thing that ballot initiative in November got right. And that is, you can't fix this problem until you deal with the police union in Minneapolis. Because the way that their contract has been written, they'll never agree to reforms. Now, we have a Department of Justice investigation here that can force them to. But I imagine you're going to have a lot of begrudged Minneapolis cut. I'm leaving. We can't do the same things we were doing before. God, think about that. We have video evidence of so much police wrongdoing in the Stallings case alone. And the mentality of the police has been, and reminder, they weren't even investigating that until the lawyer for Stallings released the tape. And then all of a sudden, well, we're going to do our due diligence. We're looking into this. Hey, by the way, all you guys in these videos, you need to either retire or find a new job somewhere else so we don't have to punish you. And that's really what seems to have happened. I mean, they were beating a man they opened fire on unannounced in disguise, who happened to return fire because he thought it was white supremacists trying to kill him. And you beat him in the street. And the entire argument is, well, you know, sometimes these guys get a little upset. Oh, really? Really? You mean they open fire on someone without announcing they're police officers, and then someone fires back and, ooh, they got a temper. Ooh, look out. Nothing will get done until you deal with that police union contract. And right now, I think we've seen the other evidence. Mayor Fry, the city council, they've circled the wagons. They've circled the wagons. They're not about to try to fix that contract. People put stuff on a ballot, and by the way, I highly encourage people to put stuff on the ballot. Eventually, one of them is going to pass. And that's about the only way this is ever going to change, unless the federal government holds them accountable. But that's about the only way you're going to hold these people accountable is you're going to have that change. It's one of the two. Because clearly, the mayor and the city council, they're not going to go do anything to try to fix this problem. Police aren't about to start, oh, you mean we can run, do whatever we want and have no accountability whatsoever, and you want us to change that? No. They were belligerent, and they still are. They sit there and, hey, do you remember all those crocodile tears when the ballot initiative was, we're working hard with the community. We're putting in all these rules to make sure that you're safer. Bang, they kill Locke. Kill Locke, violating the rules. The St. Paul Police Department did not trust those clowns with a no-knock warrant for that exact reason. And they said, yo, we gotta go play warrior training. And they had to go get a no-knock warrant. And then they murdered someone who was sleeping in their own place. Warrior training! Freaking losers. Jesus. Nothing will change because the people in power we are trusting to do this only give us lip service and not results. That's it. And so it comes down to one of two things. Either the federal government, through their investigation, and we had the Department of Human Rights, their report was pretty atrocious and frantically. And by the way, have you noticed that the main goal of that report seems to be for the police department to discredit that report, not actually do anything to solve the astounding amount of problems with that report, that report pointed out, I should say. The federal government's going to come on back down. My guess is their report's going to be just as glamorous as that one is. And so there's that chance that things get fixed that way. Or the plucky citizens of Minneapolis get out there and put another ballot initiative out there. This time with better description, better planning, a better idea what you're going to replace that police department with. And you basically tear it all the way down and rebuild it back up. Start from scratch. And this is not a problem with the people of Minneapolis. It's not. It's just not. It's a problem with a police department that has been told there will be no accountability for their actions. Finally, having people say, enough. That is what happened 2 years ago. A city where everyone I know in the city of Minneapolis has a story of a cop that blew them off, swore at them, in especially in the minority communities, hit them. It's not a police department. It's an occupying force. And yeah, we need to fix that. And so until we get leaders that are actually going to care about what the hell happened in this town 2 years ago, your only options are ballot initiatives and the federal government, because no one else is going to change a damn thing. There's your two-year memorial on that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. Get into Minnesota 1 and coronavirus update before we end the show. Native Roots Radio, I'm Awake, coming up here in the 6 o'clock hour. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. The coronavirus update for today. The update for the Minnesota Department of Health includes 1,522 newly reported cases, 9 reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 12,610. Today's update includes case data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Tuesday. Through May 23rd, the number of people with COVID hospitalized in Minnesota was 416. Of those hospitalized, 28 people in intensive care and 388 people are in non-ICU care. As of May 24th, the state reported that 3,915,459 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. That number is actually pretty dramatically. While 3,710,575 people have completed the vaccine series, there are 2,446,661 Minnesotans up to date with their vaccine shots. Number of people who have been diagnosed with COVID in the state of Minnesota, the official title, official number now is 1,500,556. And reminder, that number is grossly undercounted. And by the way, do you want even another? Duh, God, this is courtesy of Dr. Joe Eastman, who's going to join us tomorrow on the show, our COVID modeling expert. 1 in 5 adult COVID survivors under the age of 65 in the United States has experienced at least one health condition that can be considered long COVID, according to a new large new study by the CDC. 1 in 5 people who have gotten COVID. 20% of people 65 and under have a condition that would be labeled as long COVID. In patients 65 and older, it's 1 in 4. 25% of all patients 65 and older have long COVID symptoms. An indication of how seriously the Federal Health Agency views the problem of long COVID, the authors of the study recommended routine assessments for post-COVID conditions among persons who survive COVID-19. Ooh, I imagine we'll talk with Dr. Joe about that tomorrow. We'll get to that issue tomorrow. Finally today, which, yeah, it tells you a little bit of a news day. We've got the Minnesota 1 primaries. Boy, they I think there's a lot of Republicans that are breathing a lot easier today that Jeremy Munson lost that seat by 400, because that's where it was. Retired Hormel Foods CEO Jeff Ettinger, former state representative Brad Finstad, will face off in the August election after they won their respective parties' primaries on Tuesday. Both Ettinger and Finstad will face off in the August special election to see who will finish the term of late Representative Jim Hagedorn, with the winner contesting the seat again in November, finishing at just 8% of the overall vote. Oh, a whopping 8.
That's at least closer to 10 than 0. The optimistic way to look at it.
Oh, God. Oh, think about that sound effect of someone falling down the stairs. That's Jennifer coming back to Earth, I think, at this point. Oh, yeah, apparently I don't think she's had the best PR. I'm just going to just say this. That might have been her issue. I don't know. I know I've got my fingers on the pulse of the political environment of the state. She might have had some gaffes on the campaign trail.
Might need to do a thorough political analysis of that had effect.
Autopsy.
Yeah.
Or a necropsy, whatever. Get Dr. Strange in here. 8% of the overall vote, GOP candidate Jennifer Grand Canyon Carnahan will sit this one out. Carnahan, Hagedorn's widow, was recently sued by the family of Hagedorn for not reimbursing the family for medical expenses to cover his cancer care. Ettinger won the DFL vote by a landslide, snatching over 64% of the total vote. Finishing second was progressive activist Sarah Brakebill-Hackey, who ended up with 13.23% of the final vote. She actually finished better than Richard Painter, which I thought Painter was going to do a little bit better, but he did not. Finstad declared victory in a press release. I interviewed all three. It's not a surprise Ettinger was. I mean, he is, and by the way, I know the Republicans are clearly scared to death of Ettinger, because this morning, all day long, there has been my timeline. I have seen constant, you know, Michelle Fischbach thinks Finstad's great. Pete Stauber thinks Finstad's great. Even Jeremy Munson is, hey guys, hey, I lost, but vote for Finstad. I mean, they're clearly scared to death of Ettinger. They are scared to death of Ettinger as well. Because reminder, as much as they like to think, oh, there's all red territory, the eastern, southeastern side of the state is not exactly red territory. Lot of blue in Rochester, and he brings in Austin, too, with the Hormel company. I imagine.
Yeah, that area has always been kind of a purplish-red. Walls has done well down there, even during his governor elections. A
lot of the south, yeah. the river cities on the southwest, our southeast side of town, river cities on the southeast side of the state, there's definitely a blue hinge there. So yeah, we'll have to see. And by the way, it'll be interesting to see in all those processing plants out in the Southwest, how do those people feel about the rights mentality to kill them all? I mean, I don't know about that with the coronavirus, but they might have a little bit of an upset tummy about that. Finstad declared a victory in a press release Wednesday morning over Jeremy Munson, Dr. Jeremy Munson, beating the state lawmaker by 1% of the vote with all the precincts reporting. At one point he was up, Munson was up big, but yeah. It's as those tallies are coming in. Finstad, a former state director of the USDA Rural Development Minnesota under then President Trump, provided the following statement on the outcome. First, we should all take time to remember Congressman Jim Hagedorn. By the way, did Jennifer actually say anything like this in her concession speech or anything? Fought tirelessly for our conservative values and the people of southern Minnesota. I don't know about that. I'm honored that voters have given me the opportunity to continue to fight for our shared values in Congress. Finstad, Munson, and Carnahan also touted an influence of Trump, who did not give an endorsement in the race. Finstad also gained support from the already established Minnesota reps Fischbach and Stauber. Munson, who attracted headlines in 2021 by suggesting some parts of Minnesota should secede to South Dakota, attempted to differentiate his campaign from the other Republicans, saying he was the true conservative. Ettinger will be making his debut into politics with an enormous victory on the DFL side. He was able to raise significant more money than his rivals and noted in a statement Wednesday he has more small donors than any other Democrat in the race. Ettinger released the following statement on his victory. I'm honored and proud to have earned the support of Southern Minnesota voters today. While I am not a politician, through the past 2 months, our campaign has traveled the entire district, listening to voters from every corner of the Southern Minnesota. It's how we won tonight, and it's how we'll win in August and in November. The seat will only be filled in a few months before it's up for grabs again because of just the way things fell down on the timeline. So there you go. That gets you up to date there. Oh, Jennifer. Oh, Jen. What are you going to do now? We're back tomorrow. Have a good one. Till then, see ya.